You're listening to the ESO Network, your station for all things geek.
You're listening to the Blurred Nerds Podcast, part of the ESO Network, brought to you by GVTV and the Geek Ventures.
The Blurred Nerds Podcast is proud to be sponsored by Sweatpants and Coffee, the blanket fort of the internet, where comfort rules. Find them on the web at www.sweatpantsandcoffee.com.
Welcome to the Blurred Nerds Podcast, ladies and gentlemen. This is Little Bit.
And this is the Geek Father.
You're hearing a different voice for me today. Because I'm coming
Little
off,
Bit's plant hurt.
I have coming off a week of battling a cold. I feel like you've heard on the show every summer, because I'm that weirdo who gets a cold in the summer.
If you're a fan of the show, then you know Lil Big gets summer colds, and
when
she gets sick, it's very noticeable.
Like, I'm on the mend, but it's affecting my voice, and of course I have a cough. But it is time for episode 231, I believe.
231,
and let's start it off by sharing some happy news.
Some big time happy news.
Yeah, in case you missed our post on social media earlier this week, we've been teasing this for the past few episodes, but we can finally make it official because the contract has been signed. The Blurred Nerds Podcast is now officially a member of the ESO Podcast Network.
Earth Station One! We're in the house. Yes. Yeah.
For those of you who don't know, the ESO Network started about the same time that we started our show. Or actually, started about the same time we started the Geek Ventures way back when. So they started around 2012, and they are a large podcast network featuring a ton of awesomely geeky podcasts, such as Earth Station One, Earth Station Who, the Fopcast, Cigar Nerds, a ton of basically like anything you could possibly be a nerd about, there's a good chance they have a show that covers that. And we are ecstatic to be considered among those numbers now.
We are honored. And we feel like we worked very hard to get this point, and we're really, 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 really happy about it.
Yes.
we're finally glad we can share it with people. And it's been hard, you know, especially for me, keeping wraps on things, but
yeah, we had to wait for the contract.
Yeah, and it's a legit contract. Like, you know, this is a step up because the paperwork we had to sign, you know, before it was just like, yeah, cool. You know, it's kind of casual thing. This is legit business.
Yes.
So we're like moving on up. It felt legit, real legit. We're too legit to quit.
And I liked, like, you know, I think part of how we were able to join the ranks is thanks to my obsession with Dragon Con. Because I wouldn't have discovered the network had I not gone to Dragon Con. And they have a show on there called the Dragon Con Report, which I am now part of the host team for as of this past January. I have been a guest on it. Celis has been a guest on some of their other network shows. We've both done the Geek Seat on there. I in no way have met all the podcasters that are part of the network, but I've met quite a few throughout the years. And these people know their shit.
They do. I'm very impressed with them. I know I guested on Earth Station One. When they reviewed, they did like a season ending review of Falcon and the Winter Soldier. And it was some really deep conversation. And I met Julie on there. She's a huge Captain America fan like me. So shout out, Julie. So yeah, I was just like, they seem like it's a good place for us to be. And it's only going to help expand our reach. And yeah, it seems like that's how we kind of roll. Like, we just make friends with people, and then it's just kind of like who you know, and then the opportunities then present themselves. It's kind of like how we got, you know, involved with Sweatpants and Coffee.
Mm-hmm.
It was kind of like, hey, you know, I was just kind of half joking, like, nah, it would be cool if you like sponsor our show. And she's like, yeah, let's do it. And I was kidding. I'm like, what? Oh, you're real? You're serious? Okay. It was like that J.K. Simmons, you know, scene from Spider-Man where he's laughing. He's like, ha, 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 ha. Oh, wait, you're serious? It's just kind of, I don't know. We feel like we're charmed that way, but, you know, it is hard work that does actually get us there. So,
yeah. I mean, you know, sometimes we sound like we're just spitballing, but we do have to do research.
Practice, research, friendship, years of it.
We do get some details wrong.
But that's the charm of our show. Yeah. We're not perfect.
Yeah, and sometimes if you're just relying on memory, it's not going to go well. But, yeah, so be sure to go like the ESO Network on Facebook. Check out some of the other podcasts on there. You will hear a little bit more about them later on in the show. And a big thank you to everybody there for bringing us on as part of the Geek Fam.
If you hear me chewing, I'm eating some of those Snickers brownie bite things because I've been wanting to try them.
Have you decided to wait till we started a recording?
That's the problem. They're like crack. I can't stop. I've eaten way too many of them. And for somebody who's not supposed to be eating a lot of chocolate because I'm on dialysis, they're too good. I can't. It's delicious.
That's all right. I have a cough drop in my mouth right now, too, so you might hear that clicking.
These are almost as delicious as the brunch I had yesterday.
Oh, yeah, you went to snooze.
Went to snooze. Oh, my God. Me and my Star Wars ride or die friend, Lisa, we hadn't seen each other since, like, literally the start of the pandemic last year. Just like, I think the last time we went to snooze is the last time I saw her, and it's been, like, a year. And she'd been going through some tough times, you know, in the past year and everything. And, you know, we all know it's documented what I'm going through. So finally we got to hang out. We're fully vaccinated. We went and we just crushed pancakes. It was delicious. Oh my God. Pineapple upside down pancakes. Oh, I know you're allergic to pineapple.
Yeah, I was going to say, that would kill me.
That would kill a little bit, but it killed me with joy and happiness. And it was like the best food coma. It like cradled me in its embrace. It was very soft and warm. And it felt very fuzzy. You know, some food coma, they eat too much. You're like, oh, I ate too much. And you're making you're breathing. And you're just like, oh. And you got the drool coming out your mouth. Because you're like, I ate too much. It's too much. This was like a warm glow was emanating from my stomach. Because it was just like deliciousness had enveloped my body. Oh, it's so good there.
I didn't end up with a food coma yesterday, but I ended up with a borderline cocktail coma.
Now tell us, the new tiki bar opened up here in
San Antonio. We went to the second opening night of Hugman's Oasis, which is down on Commerce Street on the other side of Hugman's Dam from the Esquire. I didn't know there was a dam there. I found it out by trying to look it up on Facebook, you know, the area.
You're like, there's a dam here?
Well, they're doing construction right there, so I don't know if they're getting rid of it, but apparently, I guess it's like a landmark, or was a landmark. I can't tell what. There's a little chunk on the river between the Esquire and the other building. It's a lot of it's covered, so you can't really tell what they're doing.
Mm-hmm.
But it's like it's a multi-story building that it's in. So like the street level is a restaurant called House of Ma. It opened a week ago. So we did dinner there beforehand and then went downstairs on the Riverwalk level is the Tiki Bar. And, you know, I think a lot of people here that live here or even people that come to visit, you kind of expect anything that opens up on the Riverwalk to just be a tourist trap.
Yeah, that's usually what happens.
You know, like, because I know some people were worried this was going to end up being like a Margaritaville type thing.
Right.
But they brought in Bamboo Ben, who is kind of legendary for the tiki bars he's helped create in the country with his attention to the detail and his design concepts. So they brought him in from out of state to help, bring the concept to life. And the detail there is amazing. Like the lighting, they have water features inside and the hanging lanterns, the thatch roof and bamboo walls and wood carved tiki motifs everywhere. Like you really, when you, the entrance has got all these, like, it's got a bamboo door and all these skulls in the wall. And then when you, like, so there's an outdoor patio with like thatch umbrellas, mm-hmm. which that you're like, okay, yeah, that looks like a Riverwalk patio type of place, but not in a cheesy way. It just fits the aesthetic outside on the Riverwalk. But then once you walk through the door to go into the bar, it's like you're not, it almost feels like you're not even in San Antonio anymore, because you feel like you're in a completely different space, which is the, to me, that's the point of going into a tiki bar. You want some of the escapism. You want to feel like you're in a fantasy. You also want to feel like, for me, I want to feel like I'm back in the 60s. You know,
so you feel like you want to feel like, you know, Ricardo Montalban is going to come through there and be like, welcome to Fantasy Island.
Well,
I
associate, you know, everybody, people who are into tiki culture, everybody has different things that they like about it. And everyone takes it to a more or less degree of seriousness on like how authentic they want everything to be, or you know, what they're looking to get out of it. I'm not that serious about it. Like, I want it to look cool. I want, if there's food, I want the food to taste good. I want the drinks to taste good. Like, for me, the authenticity I'm looking for is, one, do you have your traditional tiki drinks? Which they do. Do you have your own takes, creating your own new cocktails that fit the tiki aesthetic, which they do. But also, to me, a real tiki bar does not have a ton of drinks with pineapple in it, because there, a lot of restaurants have bastardized tiki drinks by putting pineapple in fucking everything. Now, besides,
hey, pineapple's tropical, tiki's kind of tropical. We'll just go with pineapple, huh?
Yeah. Well, besides the point that I can't have that. Or I have to be that annoying person who is like, can you substitute orange juice or something else? There's just some drinks that, A, aren't supposed to really have a lot of juice in them. Like a Mai Tai. A Mai Tai should not have pineapple juice. And technically really shouldn't have orange juice in it either. It's a mix of other things. So I was, the drink menu is not large. Again, opening weekend, it will eventually expand, but I could have had over half of the things on the menu because there wasn't pineapple in it, which very exciting. I think I probably tried six drinks, just like taking a sip. I had, I think, three drinks to myself. So it's a very promising start. If you're visiting town or if you're local, I highly suggest checking it out. My advice right now, because they're not currently accepting reservations for the tiki bar. The restaurant upstairs is, but they open at 4 o'clock. Like, if you don't want to have to wait, get there at 4 o'clock.
Yeah, just leave work early. Step out real quick and be like, happy hour. Hit the tiki bar, well, baby.
Or a weekend, you know, if it's a weekend, you know, don't do the, oh, I'm not going out until 9 o'clock shit. Cause there was one point yesterday where there was 50 people waiting in line to get in there. It's not a big place. There's maybe six or seven tables and like 10 bar stools. So if you don't, especially with it being summertime, if you don't want to be stuck waiting outside in the heat, just, you know, go when it opens or give it a few weeks to get past that.
The newness, the curiosity of people. Yeah.
But it's beautiful. The bar staff was great. I mean, hell, we ended up being there for, we left the house at 5:30 and didn't get home after midnight. So,
sick lady out in the streets. Illness never stopped.
I was not contagious at that point.
I need to get some drinks in me. Maybe it'll make me feel better.
I got doctor approval to go out to make sure. And I did wear a mask when I was not at my table. But, you know, I would not go out contagious.
I'm just fucking with you. That's all.
No, but I don't want people thinking I'm being irresponsible because
she is not an irresponsible person.
Yeah, so those were our days. And before we move on to geek news, hey, happy Mother's Day.
Yay, happy Mother's Day to all you folks out there who are listening that are mothers.
Or mother figures. All you
mother figures or all those folks who
or pet moms.
Pet moms, whatever moms. If you mother something, then you know it. Hey, happy Mother's Day. And make sure you call your mom. You know, she'd love to hear from you. Don't be that child. Call your mother. Or something. Go visit her. Give her a gift. Tell her she's awesome. Because none of us would be here without moms, right?
Unless you're Jesus.
Unless you're Jesus.
Well, no, I guess technically
even
still
Jesus
a mom.
Had a mom.
He's still right? A mom. He just didn't.
Virgin births. You're still have a mother. Like Anakin had a mom. She died horribly, and then he went to the dark side because of it. The Jedi should have known. Should have brought his mom along, Qui-Gon. Mm-hmm. You freed Anakin. You could have just been like, we're the Jedi. We're taking his mom. Deal with it, Watto. What are you going to do about it? Nothing. He was going to do nothing about it. Could have brought his mom along. Anakin would have been like, had his mom there. She'd be like, it's okay, baby. It's okay. You tried real hard. You'll get him next time. And then, you know, it would have been cool, and he wouldn't have gone to the dark side. Moms save lives, okay?
Yeah, well, enough of our bad mom jokes. So we will move into some geek news tidbits right after this.
Howdy, this is Cowboy Jim, and I'm here to talk to you about the Cigar Nerd Podcast. Nothing I like more on the old dusty trail than sitting down and listening to two good old boys who smoke cigars and talk about nerd things like movies and TVs and comic books and all that stuff. So saddle up and ride on over to CigarNerdPodcast.com. They're also on the ESO Network. Yeehaw!
Welcome back to the show. So we got some interesting, I don't know if it's interesting, probably more inevitable news about the Flash TV series this week.
Yes.
It was announced.
All good things must or perhaps come to an end because news is that the guy playing Cisco Ramon and Mr. Kavanaugh, who's played all those Wellses on The Flash.
So Cisco is played by Carlos Valdez.
Yes.
And Wells is played by Tom Kavanaugh.
Yes. And they are both leaving the show after the end of this season 7.
Yeah. So they are not returning for next season.
Now, if people are asking, Grant Gustin is secured under contract for season 8 as well as all the other main characters of the show that are still left. But after that, it's kind of up in the air and there's been no news. So,
yeah, but you know, we have Supergirl currently in its final season. So, after this current TV season ends, that's the Flash is going to be the last remaining of the core Arrowverse shows,
right? And I mean, after eight seasons, I think for any show, 8 seasons is a fantastic run. And for a show based around fantasy and sci-fi, 8 seasons is like spectacular. Now, I mean, it being the only show left out of the Arrowverse, I think CW is probably going to try to pivot, especially where they have the success of Superman and Lois. It's got, you know, at this point, great reviews and everyone's kind of digging the first 5 episodes. So they're going to probably make that their main show, and I don't know, who knows, revamp the DC Fair on their network to be less, hey, look, all these handsome teenager looking people on this superhero show, to a more like grounded type of superhero stuff.
Or DC could be looking to expand their offerings that it's on HBO Max. You know, because they're getting more eyeballs on it there.
Yeah, and it's true because the first like 5 episodes of Superman and Lois, you could watch them on HBO Max if you wanted to, you know, which is an option because the CW app is, admittedly, it's terrible. I mean, yeah, you can watch the shows the next day, but you still have to watch the commercials
Although thankfully that like it used to be that you couldn't really fast forward, you know, or pause and go back to where you were, or it would say you could, but then you would go back and it would restart. Yeah.
Then you, you're like, I don't want to try because then I'll lose my spot and then I'll have to fast forward all the way back.
Yeah. So
to this point in the episode.
Thankfully they've fixed some of those issues. But it's also like you only get certain shows, you're only going to get the most current 5 episodes.
Right. It doesn't give you the whole season. It's still kind of wonky.
So once you get to, I'm 6 episodes behind, then it's like, well, fuck, now I just got to wait for the whole season to end so I can hit Netflix or something.
Yeah. And usually it always ends up on Netflix or, you know, now that the DC, you know, contract is with HBO Max, a lot of these shows are going to end up on HBO Max. So you just, you know, I might as well just get the app there and wait and then watch the whole season on that sans commercials.
Yeah. So.
But, certainly an option.
You know,
but losing, I mean,
losing 2 core cast members, you know, like there is an argument to be made that maybe
it's a law of diminishing returns. You just
also like maybe the Flash should have ended after Crisis. And introducing new villains and the forces right now, but they're not really differentiating them from metahumans. Like, are they, if season 8 ends up being the final season, they're not going to be able to find a way to get to some satisfying closure there.
And what they're doing right now, as someone who's been a fan of the Flash show since like the beginning, it's just kind of it did jump the shark here hard after like season 4. These last 4 seasons have just been kind of ridiculous. Like currently they have this. The Speed Force is like alive and it's taken the form of Barry's dead mother, which is a weird, you're just like, okay, this is odd. And now he's fighting the Speed Force and the Strength Force and other, it's like someone just thought it would be a great idea to just name a bunch of different forces. Like, what is their strength? What is there? Is there a Black Force? Is there, what can we come up with? You know, too many drugs, too many suits. Too many bad decisions.
Yeah, I mean, I do find it weird that, like, all of a sudden, you know, it used to be a bunch of people, we'd make fun of Legends of Tomorrow. But granted, it was obviously supposed to be more comedic.
Yeah, Legends of Tomorrow is supposed to be ham, you know, like ham-fisted and kind of goofy and satirical.
But they have started to tackle some more serious stuff. But I find it funny how it's all of a sudden flipped to where, like, you know, Legends of Tomorrow all of a sudden has much more interesting character
things going on for it.
Yeah, and stories. And they kind of got over that sophomore slump that a lot of, especially superhero shows, deal with.
Mm-hmm.
And they really haven't run out of stories to tell yet. And plus, the way Wider is, you know, after we got over the initial shock of, like, Rory just it's not Rory, but I'm going to call him Rory because Doctor Who. Arthur. Fuck, what's his name? The guy who was on the first season and then all of a sudden he left. And you're like, wait a minute, he was the biggest name actor on there.
I know what you're talking about.
Yeah, Brandon Ralph has left and his wife. But they set it up to where that's specifically what it's supposed to be, is that characters can come and go.
Yeah.
And can come back.
Right, yeah.
But, you know, like, to me, like, bringing Constantine onto there and having him become more of a regular and not just a guest star, like, just bringing a whole new sense of life, and having it be Matt Ryan.
Right. And that was a good move because then it opens up a whole new avenue where you can bring in magic and, you know, different storylines and more of the supernatural kind of stuff. But yeah, with the Flash, you just kind of, there's a core set of cast members, and that's kind of more of a show where the people you start with, it's like ride or die. You know, you just, people get used to those characters and they become fan favorites. Like, I know, I really like Cisco Ramon. I thought he was a good character. I thought, you know, he just, you know, he gave him a lot of good stuff to work with. And, I mean, he's a great actor. It's going to be a bummer because it's like, it's Barry's best friend and he's just kind of out. You know, I just think you've gone through a bunch of Barry's rogues gallery, you know, some of his best villains, and now you're just kind of scraping the bottom of the barrel and then you're just starting to repeat Can we bring back Reverse Flash again, maybe?
I enjoy Tom Cavanaugh as an actor, you know. But
yeah, Tom Cavanaugh's great.
Before he was on The Flash, even I enjoyed a bunch of the stuff he did, like
when he guest starred on Scrubs.
Well, he also had that show.
JD's brother,
He had his own show for a while. Yeah, on Ed or something like that.
He's fantastic. He's a fantastic comedian actor. He's got great timing.
At some point, maybe you're just, you know, he's played too many roles on.
He's one played show. Too many Wellses. Yeah. Too many Wellses. Like they went overboard with the Wells. It's like I think he's just out of Wells to play. And like, I think maybe he realized
he's a great actor and you like him, but
yeah, I think they just realized
using him,
or he realized like he's just as far as he can go on this show. I think the character is creatively bankrupt. I mean, they're out of things to say and do with this character, and I think he just reached a natural conclusion where they just like just you know, wrap him up and let him just you know fade away into the sunset. And I think Cisco's character the same. He just. I mean, the show's about The Flash, and I think season 8 would be a perfect time to wrap it up. And I think, you know, Grant Gustin, they're trying to renegotiate contracts, and I don't know. I think people are just
over it.
They're done, you know? Yeah. Eight years is great. 8 years is enough. Like, everyone's trying to meet that magical Smallville 10 seasons, and even Smallville, for example, that started to fade after season 6.
Yeah, we can't all be supernatural people.
Yeah,
it's a miracle. No, it's a miracle. It survived season, the Leviathan season. What is that? Season 8, season 7.
Like, oh, that was a massive dip. It's just like, ugh, can we move? No, who thought of this? Yeah, every show they have that. You know, the first season's great. Second season, you have that sophomore.
No, I don't know. I'd say Supernatural actually is pretty. For a lot of people, it's pretty hard to make it for the first season.
Yeah, well, exactly. A lot of shows
when you compare it to the other ones.
Well, especially shows that are sci-fi and like fantasy based, because I mean, you're just trying to at the first start of it establish the universe, the canon, the backstories of the characters, and it's a lot of exposition heavy dialogue and information to slog through.
Well, it's also actors haven't found their way.
Yeah, because you know you're introduced to a new character, and you've got to how do I make this guy feel realistic within this fantasy crazy universe? How do I make it feel like, you know, this person's life is, you know, three-dimensional and complex, and you know, some actors figure it out, some don't. Some shows get a chance to thrive and survive, and those that are end up on Fox don't.
Yep. Speaking of things surviving, it's something I never expected to read reboot news about. Do you remember Faces of Death from our childhood?
Oh, man, I used to.
You watch as a kid?
I used to beg my mom when we go to Blockbuster.
Yeah.
And I'd walk in the store and, you know, I don't know how every store was laid out, but the one I went to, my favorite store, if you like went to the back walls, it was all the new release stuff and the Blockbusters. But there was a section, a small section off to the right when you first walk in. It had all the B-movie horror,
yeah,
TNA stuff,
and I always made a beeline for the horror.
I was like 12, 13 years old, and I'm like, that's my jam. And I would beg my mom to rent Faces of Death because, you know, as far as I knew when I was a kid, that was real.
Yeah,
I watched real people die.
A lot of people thought that.
I mean, I thought it was real. Then I was like crestfallen. I was like, what? You mean it's not real? But it was still awesome because it was just gory, and it was amazing,
and they turned it into a whole, like, I think there ended up being, well, there was at least two.
Yeah, there was a series of them. They had them going forever.
So for those of you who were too young to have been able to, you know, go rent VHSs, because I don't know if this made the move to DVD or Blu-ray
back in the olden days.
Yes. So Faces of Death was basically a fakeumentary.
A mockumentary, if you will.
Classic horror that basically would show a ton of different ways that humans could die in very graphic detail. And the way it looked like it was a documentary, it included clips from around the world in an attempt to convince everyone that these various deaths were real. But, you know, as is the case, many were not. Hollywood Reporter has now said that Legendary Entertainment, who's behind Godzilla vs. Kong, has picked up the rights to the franchise and is planning a reboot for the Gen Z era. The team behind the 2018 Netflix sex worker thriller Cam will write and direct. Haven't heard of that show or movie. The synopsis for the new reboot is a female moderator of a YouTube-like website whose job is to weed out offensive and violent content and who herself is recovering from a serious trauma stumbles across a group that is recreating the murders from the original film. But in this story, primed for the digital age of online misinformation, the question is, are these murders real or fake?
Well, that's interesting how they worked into the original, like, this is all make-believe and it's not real, but yeah. They worked that aspect into this reboot, like, is it real or are they not real?
Yeah, so the original first film was released theatrically in 1978 and was written and directed by John Alan Swartz. Reviews weren't kind to it, as it was met with repulsion and was banned in several countries. It wasn't until it hit the VHS market in the 1980s that it basically achieved a cult status.
I think the fact that it was like banned in a bunch of countries was like a selling point.
Yeah,
I remember on the VHS, like on the box, you know, because you'd always have the tape behind the actual box, like the VHS canister, whatever the case would be there, and then be the box art, and on the box art it would say banned and so and so, banned and so and so, and it was like, oh, it's been banned somewhere, I gotta watch this. I am intrigued now, you know.
Yeah, so it'll be interesting. I mean, there's no news on when it's going to be released.
Yeah,
when it's going to start production, you know, as is the case with many announcements, you might never ever see the light of day. So
could be in development hell forever. We don't know, but somebody greenlit this.
We thought that stuff was graphic back when we were watching that, and you know, you look at where movie magic has come.
Oh, I can only imagine with the effects and what they're able to do now, even with practical effects and how far they've come. It can make some of that stuff look really, really, really awesome.
Yeah. So, all right. Well, let's take one more break here. Get a word from our sponsor and such. And we will be right back to finish
out. After these messages, we'll be right back
to finish out this week's show.
The Blurred Nerds podcast is sponsored by Sweatpants and Coffee, where you'll find everything from thought-provoking personal essays, recipes from the Catastrophe Kitchen, themed Spotify playlists, new book reviews, and more. Want to join the coziest corner on the net? Send in your submission today at www.sweatpantsandcoffee.com/write-for-us. Everyone these days could use a little support, and your friends at the ESO Network are no different. With the ESO Network Patreon. The cool thing is when you help support us, it's you who will benefit. With four tiers starting for as little as 25 cents a week, you can listen to some of your favorite network podcasts early, hear exclusive content, maybe get some ESO swag, or even possibly take a shot at the geek seat. All you need to do is sign up at patreon.com/ESO Network.
And we're back. And I probably just peeked out the microphone. Sorry. all right. And some exciting news real quick. So it turns out we are going to be getting a new season of Mystery Science Theater 3000. Bow, 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 bow,
bow. That's right. Bow, bow, bow. Joel and the Bots have successfully funded a full new season of MST3K.
Yeah, they once again brought home a successful Kickstarter campaign to fund a full new season. That was titled Let's Make More MST3K and Build the Gizmoplex campaign. The latter referring to a new web portal that creator Joel Hodson intends to build as the permanent online home for the show. The campaign wrapped up just a few days ago, hit all of its funding goals, including milestones for a full 12 episodes, as well as Halloween and Christmas specials.
Yeah, and the MST3K Kickstarter, which got a massive infusion of cash in its last few days of operation, managed to actually surpass its 2015 incarnation, which raised $5.76 million to create the season that ended up running on Netflix. And the new campaign, to compare, ended up hitting $6.518 million with options for late pledges still available. So bringing in the cash, man.
Yeah. So it's pretty cool. It looks like Jonah Ray is set to reprise his starring role on the series, although we will be getting at least two new episodes with Hodgson's Joel Robinson back in the theater, as well as a few with Emily Marsh, who joined the shows for its live tours starting back in 2019.
Yeah, it's not bad for what they say is an independent show with a bunch of weirdos playing with puppets on TV.
And another show that, you know, for being, I mean, I guess it's kind of old, but, you know, not as old as, say, something like Logan's Run, but it's something that has reached cult status in geekdom. So it's
right.
Very cool.
When you turn something like into what it's like a verb now, you know, when you're watching a goofy movie or something dumb and you're like, oh man, this would be great if we could MST3K this some bitch.
Yeah. Well, like, yeah. Would there be Riff Raff without?
Yeah. Would there be Riff Tracks without MST3K? Yeah. No, I don't think there would be.
No, Riff Raff, that's on a horror.
Oh, Riff Raff also. Yeah. Yeah, I think, you know, like you said, we've met Joel Hodgson. We've interviewed him.
He's super cool.
He's a real cool dude. And it's really nice to see that he's had this success and he's going about it his way. You know, he's not kind of beholden to, you know, corporate masters or the suits, you know, that decide things.
Also, he's been very smart with the way he handles his property. You know, I'm sure there's many ways he could have cashed in on this throughout the years and been like, let's do a merch bomb. Let me farm this out to other companies and just, you know, have my name attached, but not have control of it, not have input anymore. And he's like, really, he's allowed it to expand, but he's kept it true to his vision of what he started out doing years and years ago. And it's rare that you get to see that. With something that started out underground and then made it to the mainstream.
Yeah, that it's mainstream, but it still has its underground roots and its kind of underground sensibilities. And I think that's really cool.
All right, let's end this episode with doing a little bit of award show discussions. You know, award shows don't often pay attention to geek properties. They have more lately, so that's kind of what makes us pay attention to them. But we've got the Golden Globes in the news this past week, and not for a reason I think they're excited about.
I know, they're in a bit of trouble.
Yes, so they had the Hollywood Foreign Press Association is basically behind the Golden Globes. Recently approved a series of proposed reforms in response to widespread criticism about their ethics and demographics. Mm-hmm. Their plan included a 50% growth in the organization over the next 18 months. But, you know, basically, their critics are saying it's, you know, it's not enough and it's too little too late, because we basically found out that, like, their board, it's like 100...
I think they're 87 member group of, you know, press, that not a single one of them is a minority.
Yeah. So as of February 2021, the organization had no black journalist out of its nearly 100 members.
That's bad.
Yeah.
That's real bad.
And, you know, and as we see every year, like, they are often accused of snubbing many movies that minorities are behind. This past year was no different. Like, they snubbed The Five Bloods and Ma Rainey's Black Bottom. You know, they received much fewer nominations than expected, while no Black films were nominated for the Best Motion Picture. Netflix, after they released this proposal, Netflix CEO and Chief Content Officer Ted Sarandos declared that they're pausing their relationship with the HFPA, basically saying that, you know, this ain't enough. You got to do more.
And they joined Time's Up, which is a coalition of more than 100 Hollywood PR firms, GLAAD, and even Amazon Studios, and just, you know, decrying the HFPA's too little, too late attempts.
Yeah, and we've started seeing some big name actors join.
Mark Ruffalo, Scarlett Johansson, who've gone on record. I know. I think Mark Ruffalo, he has a quote in here. He says, "Honestly, as a recent winner of a Golden Globe, I cannot feel proud or happy about being a recipient of this award." He said, because he was, you know, he was nominated for his and won for last year's "I Know This Much Is True." He says, "It's discouraging to see the HFPA, which has gained prominence and profited handsomely from their involvement with filmmakers and actors, resist the change that is being asked of them from many of the groups that have been most disenfranchised by their culture of secrecy and exclusion." So there you go. And even Scarlett Johansson issued a call to step back from the HFPA, calling it an organization that was legitimized by the likes of Harvey Weinstein to amass momentum for Academy recognition. So just basically, like, it was like a glad handing show to, you know, get your movie propped up to, hey, here's a Golden Globe. It's now a front runner for the Oscars.
Yeah. And she, you know, she highlighted the often uncomfortable press conferences that are required of people who, you know, are seeking Golden Globe recognition, which basically meant, you know, they, all the times that we're seeing all these women getting asked really sexist questions that would not be asked of their male co-stars.
Have you watched a lot of those?
Oh yeah,
those press conferences, and you're just like,
cringeworthy.
They ask them these questions. You're like, who asked that stuff? Why would you want to know that? Why is that? Why is it pertinent to her performance in the movie or to her acting in general? You know. That's why she skipped a lot of that stuff, because she was just like, no, I'm not down with that. And I don't think any actress should be.
What about you? Look at, like, I think there's like a whole series of interviews that, like, Jennifer Lawrence has just been like, yeah, fuck you, I'm out of here.
Yes, I've seen those. She's just like, deuces, I'm leaving.
Because there's no, or like, let's use somebody like Kristen Stewart. You know, there's a ton of interviews with her where you can, like, just see visibly the discomfort on her face of questions she's being asked. Mm-hmm. You know, even when it's like something as simple as, you know, when she first gained, I guess, a massive notoriety for Twilight. And instead of talking about the movie, people wanted to know about her dating life with Robert Pattinson. It's like, and he got some of those questions as well, but not to the degree that a woman gets them.
Yeah.
But, you know, and what does this have to do with geekdom? Well, really, I think it's something that a lot of us in nerd fandoms have known for a long time, that, like, we don't see the movies that we think are amazing get nominated for these awards to begin with. And
yeah, usually the best we can hope for is, oh, it's going to get nominated for a special effects award.
Or costumes.
Yeah.
Which those people are
cinematography.
People are deserving.
Well-deserved, but I mean, also the people who wrote the scripts are, you know, they deserve recognition as well. And the directors, the actors, the people who busted their ass, you know, a lot of the movies we love and we hope get nominated don't, because.
Yeah. And could it be because of, we know there's like secret boards and secret handshakes, and like everybody on these voting bodies has their own little behind closed doors shit going on when they're deciding what wins. But
and I don't know about you,
those boards haven't changed in hundreds. Yeah,
this
is
probably true. I mean, I don't know about you, but I mean, that's part of the reason why I'm just not down with award shows, because one, they don't do anything or give any kind of recognition of the movies that I'm watching. Two, it's like a circle jerk. It's just like kind of a glad handing, like, hey, it's who you know and who's powerful and whose palm you grease, to get your movie nominated or to get it recognized.
You know, I used to enjoy the Oscars because before we had streaming services, that was the place I could find out about smaller films like art house films or foreign films, because we didn't have access to that back when we weren't able to like stream stuff.
Right.
But then it became that like I really used to enjoy the Golden Globes because I realized, besides, you know, winners and losers, that this was just a place that the celebrities were going to and they're getting fucking drunk and not censoring themselves.
Like, some of those award speeches were amazing.
Yeah, like that we were getting to see it on a more uncensored level. It wasn't about being prim and proper. It's like, oh, the Globes where everybody's going to party.
Yeah. Some guy wins a Golden Globe and is like, I'm awesome. I love this shit. Deuces, I'm out. You know, you're like, or he's hammered.
People get up there and they're like, Tom Hanks is right there in front of me.
Yeah, right. Oh my God. I shook hands with, you know, Scarlett Johansson. She touched me. You know, it's them geeking out over each other.
Yeah, but it sucks to know that behind the scenes, there was really not
exclusion
that much.
Yeah. And, you know,
what's like, you know, Grammys, like how upset, you know, more and more musicians are getting with the Grammys and saying it doesn't mean anything anymore because artists.
There's so many musical categories that are ignored.
Yeah.
And there are artists that are winning Grammys for things that they, maybe other artists should be more deserving of. But that's the thing with awards. So they're subjective to begin with. And then you add in people and their own opinions and then, you know, their ability to be, I don't know, influenced. And then stuff like this happens. And then your dirty laundry comes out. And then, oops, you got problems. Let me look at the Oscars when the whole, you know, Oscars are too white controversy. And they're trying to pull themselves out of that. And, I mean, they're not having the success really of that either.
Yeah. I mean, I think, one, I think you should have more than 100 people voting on something, quite frankly.
I agree. I don't know how you could do it where you open up voting to a mass of people. Like,
if American Idol and The Voice
can do it,
have a phone line with people voting on shit, they can figure out a way.
But see, that's the thing, is the prim and proper, like the upper crust of the movie industry, you know, the people that vote on these art house and these indie films or these really kind of films for a small audience that are like critically acclaimed, but box office is nothing because no one goes to see these movies. They feel like they would lose their, I guess, status.
Yeah, I don't know.
If the majority of people could vote for something, and then
if more people were able to vote, the Minari would have won some shit.
Probably.
And Minari deserved to win some shit.
I haven't watched that yet, but I heard Steven Yeun was fantastic in it.
Yeah, like I know, and like a few of the cast members won some awards, but it got snubbed for so many others. When, yeah, like, I don't get Nomadland.
I watched Nomadland, and it just was basically, what's her name, Frances McDormand.
Yeah,
yeah, it was basically her in a van.
Yeah,
rolling around.
But it's like, I get like
lady in a van stuff.
She's a talented actress, but she's won a shit ton of awards. Like, at some point, you got to be like, give some younger people some fucking shit.
See, and then the thing that's leading to, like, okay, so Nomadland won for Best Picture and Best Director, and the director was, I forget her name, but she's like the first Asian woman to win a Best Director, and only the second woman ever to win a Best Director Oscar. The other being Kathryn Bigelow for
Hurt Locker.
Yeah. So it's like only two women in the 90 some odd year history of the Oscars. Are you serious? Yeah, and then you have
and you bet that the people who voted are still probably like patting themselves on the fucking back, like, yeah,
let an Asian woman win, haha, good job guys. And then you go and you lose all that cachet by, you know, snubbing Chadwick Boseman.
Yeah,
you know, in his. I watched the Ma Rainey's Black Bottom. He was fantastic in that. And I'm not saying, who is it that won?
Anthony Hopkins.
Yeah, I'm not saying Anthony Hopkins is not a fantastic actor. He is amazing. And
but you should not set up your whole show assuming that Bosman was going to win.
And then he does.
Saving that category for the end.
Right. And people were thinking like that's what's going to happen, thinking you awarded Heath Ledger a posthumous Oscar for his fantastic performance as the Joker. And Chadwick Boseman, his performance, I feel like deserves a little extra merit because he was acting while going through, I don't know, rigorous cancer treatments and a bunch of surgeries, and he was still acting his ass off.
Oh, and obviously, like, the producers of the show thought it was going to be that way, but it's like, you know what? Unless you're opening those fucking envelopes and finding out ahead of time.
How could you know?
Maybe you should not rearrange the order that you're giving out the awards, thinking that you're going to end on this big high note.
And wasn't the Oscar ceremony, it was like the saddest Oscar ceremony I've ever seen. It was just so bereft of any kind of joy and whimsy. Like, we're coming out of a year-long pandemic. We should try to be celebrating, like, hey, man, we're together here. Let's make this fun and happy. And
or, hey, man, we were still able to actually release movies.
Right. Hey, let's not make this a misery fest, kind of, I don't know. But, you know, and then Anthony Hopkins, I mean, and he's on the spectrum, which is fantastic.
And he made an outstanding shout out to Chadwick.
Yes. I mean, he honored him and it was everything, but I'm just like, I don't know.
Especially, you know, I guess he really can't.
He
got put in the awkward position of people being upset about it. And it's like, well,
right.
You know,
and I'm not upset that he won. I just feel like they set it up and you made you think for all intents and purposes that Chadwick Boseman was going to be a shoe-in. So you get that kind of feeling and you're just like, yeah, all right, it's a nice cap to his career. Like, you know, just to honor him and his memory. And then it's just like that rug gets pulled out from under you at the very end. So you're naturally going to be disappointed.
I mean, they got to do something. Like, besides it being a panini, the Oscars had like its biggest plummet in ratings in decades.
Yeah. Steven Soderbergh, no, maybe you shouldn't direct it again. Next time.
You know, or just maybe I need to update this shit for younger people. Or even even us, people in our 40s. Like, even we're like, y'all, this is stuffy.
Yeah, it's stuffy. It's not social media savvy. It's not set up for the digital media age.
No.
They're still holding on to having
to do shit by Zoom and remote shooting. Yeah. Like the thing that I remember, I think it was the Emmys last year, which was the first award show that we had to watch where a bunch of the casts and actors had to shoot remotely. And it was the year that Schitt's Creek like just swept and they had done their little quarantine thing and had their own little private party in a location so that the majority of the cast could all be there together, even though they had all their tables separated.
Right.
And like that is a perfect example of that was a group of people who knew how to capture what is currently going on with how people consume media. One, the way they wrote the show. I mean, Schitt's Creek is fucking phenomenal for what it accomplished. And like going out on a high note and just such wit written to it.
Right.
But then seeing them, that cast together, and how excited they were when they won and how much they loved each other and how excited they were just to be a part of it. And the fact, you know, they had all done their work to quarantine so that they could be there together and stream watching the awards together. Like that is what captures viewers now. Seeing that pure joy and excitement, that is what other award shows should have looked at and been like, you know what, this is what we need to do.
Yeah, people want to see something they feel is genuine.
Yeah,
that's real. And I think social media and, you know, Instagram and Twitter and things like that, for better or worse, that captures that. It captures, you know. And I think these award shows, like Golden Globes and the Academy Awards, are trying to hold on to this classic Hollywood notion of like 1940s, 1950s, 1960s Hollywood, where it's just like the glitz and the glamour, which is great, but it's like
some celebrities just aren't good at coming across genuine. Like the Levy family, Catherine O'Hara, like I think it's pretty much that when you see them, whether they're acting or being themselves, you're just like, yeah, that's that person. That's how they are, you know, and it makes them endearing.
Yeah, because they're awkward. They're goofy. They're just, so all these actors and actresses just, you know, their job, they're on camera. And when they're on, like they're one way, but then like they turn the camera off. And when they're like themselves, they're awkward and they're weird sometimes. They're socially like, they have anxiety and they're like us, except they have really good jobs. They pay them a lot of money.
And they have to be in the public eye a lot more.
Right. But when they're doing their job and they get to pretend and they get to walk through that door to another universe or galaxy or a fantasy setting or whatever it is, they get to be another person. And that's, you know, they shine and they get to exhibit their talent. But when they have to like just be in public or be a regular person, it's just, and they're in the public eye a lot, you know, they don't feel like they could be themselves because they feel like themselves are just won't be accepted by people. Yeah, and they're like us.
So basically award shows. Do better.
Yeah.
Get hip.
Join us in the 21st century, would you please? It'd be great. Yeah. We'd love you to be here with us.
Yeah, maybe bring some members in that are younger than 60. There are hip senior citizens and older.
Some older people are just like, you are so cool. Yeah. I want to be you when I grow up.
But maybe get some outside the traditional system.
Maybe they'll choose movies that more than 10 people have seen.
Yeah.
I'm saying.
Well, you know, it must be pretty fucking easy to watch those movies when they're sending you screener copies.
I'm saying, hey, the Geek Father, me, I'd love some screener copies. Help me with my movie reviews. I'm just saying.
Yeah.
But whatever. Whatever. I am yet still a nobody.
So but there's soon. There's our rant for this week's show.
Yeah.
As always, we appreciate you tuning in. Hey, don't forget to check out our YouTube channel, The Blur Nerds.
Yes, I've just posted my thoughts on Amazon's animated adaptation of Robert Kirkman's Invincible. So you
which has been out. Renewed for another season.
Another two seasons.
Yeah, so it is worth watching, folks.
I guarantee you'll love it.
My latest video doing Spock brows and talking about the history of Spock is up.
Fascinating.
I'm currently working on my next one. I just need to do some voiceover stuff for it. But hey, please go check it out. Leave some comments because, you know, in case you're not aware, the way YouTube works is algorithms are based on engagement. So
engagement, likes, subscriptions.
Discussions.
Bell notifications. Discussions.
Well, it's not even subscriptions, really. It's discussions. That's why every YouTuber you watch says, don't forget to like, click subscribe, and comment below. Because it's the comments that help the algorithm, unfortunately.
They're chasing that proverbial dragon.
Yeah. So we're not after the ad money, folks. We just, you know, want some eyeballs.
We like the engagement. Yeah. Eyeballs on us. And it's the only way that makes us better and more informed, and it opens up other avenues of thought, you know.
Right. Don't just say we suck. Tell us how we suck and how we can improve.
Yeah, exactly. There you go.
But we hope you enjoy yourselves, folks. Have a good next couple of weeks, and until next time. Y'all take care out there.
And don't forget your pillow.
The Blurred Nerds podcast is sponsored by Sweatpants and Coffee, home of the real anxiety blob. Find them on the web at www.sweatpantsandcoffee.com.
You've been listening to the Blurred Nerds podcast, a member of the ESO Network. Join in on the nerd fun by following the Blurred Nerds on YouTube, Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. You can also check out our sister channel, GVTV, on YouTube at Geek Ventures Television. Have comments or show ideas? Want to hear more? Subscribe today, join us on our social media channels, or send us an email to theblurrednerds@gmail.com.
This has been a broadcast of the ESO Network. Be part of the crew and help support our shows by donating to our ESO Patreon or by shopping for the TeePublic store, which can all be found at www.esonetwork.com. The ESO Network, your station for all things geek.